And welcome to Como Explained. It's the new podcast from the KBIA newsroom that takes some of the thorny issues and politics that affect our community and breaks them down. I'm Scott Pham, the digital content director here at KBIA. My co-host is Ryan Muehlener, assistant director of the newsroom. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Scott. Doing this over our lunch hour today for the first time.
You can have lunch later.
Yeah, I know.
Well, yeah, you'd be fine.
Actually, I already ate because I figured I'd be really, really grumpy before this got done if I didn't eat beforehand. But
yeah,
it's the first time for us, so hopefully that goes well. How about you? How you feeling?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing okay. Busy week. We're trying to do two shows this week because I'll be traveling a little bit later in the summer. So Thursday, another show. A lot of Como Explained this week.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think we're going to finally get to one of those Reddit ideas.
Yeah, really psyched. Yeah, coming up, let's do a little preview.
Coming up,
we're looking into the whole tunnels debacle. Are there tunnels, secret tunnels under Columbia?
And just as a tease, we're just going to end up talking about Columbia Underground.
Columbia Underground, yeah. We're expanding it out, talking about everything that is underground in Columbia.
So that's going to be a fun one.
More like two things that are underground.
Yeah, a lot of the things some of the things we know about that are underground.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to tell us about a secret bat cave or something.
Some things that are underground
yeah.
in Columbia.
Okay. All right.
No, but today we're talking about government transparency. And I want to talk a little bit about why government transparency matters to people that are not journalists. This is something that's a little hard to get our heads around because I feel like we're just surrounded with journalists here. We're talking to journalists all the time. And it just seems like the biggest freaking deal to us, right?
Yeah, because to us it's, oh man, I can't talk to this person I should be able to talk to who's a government employee and taxpayer money, yada, yada, yada. But no, there are some real world examples, and there's one of them that we wanted to mention that seems pretty obvious. A lot of people probably heard about is we've got Lieutenant Governor Peter Kender,
mm-hmm.
And this is a couple of years ago now, but it was a big deal when it happened. That through some of this, using different laws that are available to journalists to get public information about what politicians are doing, they were able to find out that he had spent a ton of money on travel over the 5 years he'd been in office, enough that he was paying on average for at least one night a week at a hotel in St. Louis every week over the course of 5 years.
Yeah, it came out to more than $35,000 worth of travel. And I think the guy before that, Joe Maxwell, the lieutenant governor before Kender, had spent less than $3,000 for hotels during his entire term.
Right. And it got even hairier because Kender, just like every statewide politician, they're always looking at the next office, right? And so there were many of these visits and things that the different reasons he was staying different places outside of Jefferson City, that he was attending different events that sometimes were politically themed, some Tea Party events, things like that.
And a lot of social events, too.
And a lot of social events. He was going to the World Series, and he was doing all kinds of fun stuff as well. Perks of the job is what the quote that got thrown around a lot there. So basically, they were using this taxpayer money, and it had been relatively unchecked how this money was being, because these statewide office holders do have the ability to use this kind of travel money. The governor, since then, people have been looking closely also at the governor's travel expenses as well. Specifically, we had a kind of another thing recently with his new airplane that they had
right.
going there too. So, but anyway, back to Kender. So after this came out, he tried to head it off and you know, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch wrote an article. He tried to head it off and say, you know what, okay, I don't have to reimburse anybody for anything, but just to put this behind me, I'm going to reimburse $35,000 to the state. Go spend it on, like, poor, you know, orphan kids and stuff. Literally, that's what he said. Please spend it this way.
Yeah. The funny thing is, I don't think you can do that.
No,
I don't think you can make that happen.
Yeah. That's not like...
If you're lieutenant governor.
Yeah. You're not making a donation here. Yeah. What you're saying you're doing is reimbursing taxpayer dollars that weren't going there in the first place. Anyway, whatever you want to say, he went ahead and did that. I think actually reports are that in the end, he ended up reimbursing over $50,000 because there were a lot of other these travel expenses. But it basically shone a light on something, way taxpayers' money were being spent that they weren't aware of. And that's everybody's money, right? Anybody that has a job. And so most people listening to this podcast most likely, were footing the bill for that over the course of that 5 years and are still footing the bill for things like that.
Yeah. So this is a transparency issue because the Dispatch would not have been able to get this information if it was not public by law, right? Because you know that the government is not going to want to give that information up if they weren't compelled to.
Right, right. And there are some protections. We'll talk about that later. Not everything is available, but this is one of those that definitely is.
And, yeah. You know, and it could have been a lot more available. Actually, I called the dispatch today to kind of get a little background on the story. And what they told me was that the travel records, that is where he stayed the night and what he spent, that stuff was publicly available. But it wasn't easy to match up with his schedule because he wasn't always recording everything he was doing on an official visit. You know, the schedule will just say that he's not in the office, but it wouldn't actually know where he was because these are social visits. He's not going to put down in his official schedule, you know, St. Louis Christmas party or something like that. So we actually had to go into the society journals and walk around to all the bars and say, hey, have you seen this guy? He's the lieutenant governor. And they'd be like yeah, yeah, puppy. He was here last night. Yeah. And then through this like very on the ground kind of investigation, figured out that he had spent a lot of time doing things that couldn't possibly be for work, couldn't possibly be part of his responsibilities.
Yeah, and going back probably, I'm assuming, cross-referencing stories that they had written, others had written, that could kind of piece together his timeline. Think about it like a CSI show where you're putting together this timeline of hour by hour where people are going. That's apparently what they're having to do to make this story make sense and put two and two together on, okay, this money was being spent this way, and here's what he was most likely doing. Here's the excuse he probably could have given for staying in this place at this given time. So,
yeah, so even this is, you know, it's great that we have his expenses available through records requests, but it's even that is not quite enough. It still takes a lot of work to figure out what our government is doing, what they're doing on a daily basis, and that's worrisome.
Yeah, it is, and that's, I mean, you know, we always talk about why journalists are still relevant. I think that's one of the reasons, because you have to be able to figure out the context behind some of this stuff. And because otherwise, and we'll talk about getting the information like this. I've looked through information like they probably got for this before when you do these requests for data like that. And yeah, it's really cumbersome. It's really difficult to go through. Sometimes you're literally just asking the people, what the heck is this? They'll have to give you, if it's a data sheet, they'll have to give you guidelines for what each different field represents and that kind of stuff. So yeah, there's a lot of analysis and combing that goes through. That's how the sausage gets made. But in the end, what really matters is that here's what the story is. Here's us getting to the truth about what was happening, how this money was being spent, and whether it was being spent the right way.
Yeah. So that's an example of why we need government transparency in a very simple level.
Right, right.
Yeah. You know, and this was a subject of Intersection earlier this week. You guys were talking about government transparency. And one thing that came up that I thought was an interesting topic was the public has a pretty strong stomach for government secrecy. You know, that when it turns out that certain documents aren't available or that it's hard to get certain information, the public doesn't seem to care so much. Journalists get really, really riled up about that. And there's a disconnect there, right? There's a problem where maybe, you know, journalists are getting too riled up and not making the right points, and the public isn't getting upset enough. There should be some meaning in the middle somehow.
Yeah, I think you're right. We were wondering what people, you know, I think it probably goes both ways. I think there are probably some people out there that think we should be able to know everything, and there are some things we can't know. There are some information we're not available to get to, but I think it probably airs the other way. Unfortunately, the public's kind of just, you know, that's okay. We're not going to know this, and that's okay.
Yeah. I think there's some anxiety too among journalists that if we don't have the information, we're not telling the story right, then people just think we're screwing up. Right.
Right.
And it's like, well, he's just not very good at his job.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's a dance sometimes too, getting this information. Because we'll talk about FOIA and sunshines here.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about it. Let's move on to it.
Move on to that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there are two laws that are kind of the backbone of the main instruments of how we get information from the government in terms of data, documents, official stuff.
Right.
One of them is the Freedom of Information Act, and the other is called the Sunshine Law,
right, which really they're kind of the same law, just one's federal, one's state. So the Freedom of Information Act, let's just go back to the beginning. The Freedom of Information Act was created on the federal level in 1966. And so it basically was saying we need to be able to give this access to journalists, and not just journalists, just anybody in the general public should be able to get information about different governmental agencies. Again, a lot of times these requests, this isn't like us calling up and saying we want to talk to you. I'm putting in a FOIA request to do an interview with you.
I wish we could.
Oh, yeah, that would be great. But no, you put in a FOIA request for records of, I don't know, like the let's use that E. coli example, all the E. coli levels at a DNR-operated lake for the last 6 years, okay? You can put in a FOIA request and be able to get that information in a data set or in a form of reports, whatever they've got, internal documents you're able to get. And so that FOIA, the FOIA came into place in 1966, but when it came into place, there were all these exceptions, and the timelines for when people had to respond were so loose, and they could charge so much money for what you were asking for.
Very cool, because this is the 60s, everything's in paper. It takes staff time to go and find the paper and make photocopies
right.
with the Xerox machine, which had just been invented.
Right, and, right. And I'm sure they were copies were even more expensive than they are now. So basically, there were all these reasons why it wasn't working. People, journalists and regular people were not able to get the access to the documents because of all these other barriers that were in place. Then in the 70s, this thing Watergate happened, okay? So when Watergate happens...
Yeah, I saw the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Deep Throat. So when Watergate happened... That basically shown that was, I would say, you know, the pivotal moment in investigative journalism in the U.S. Like, that's inspired so many investigative journalists since, and is like the thing that nobody will ever top, right? That basically shone a light on how important investigative journalism is, and also these FOIA laws were not working, right? People were not able to get to the information they needed to directly through the government. They had to go through whistleblowers and or be able to find these back avenues to get what they need. And so there was a new thing called the Privacy Act Amendment, and this was in 1974, okay? This was after Watergate, and basically the goal was to make things work better. It was to say that that agencies needed to respond quicker to you, and there were rules about how much they could charge for different documents. Some of the exemptions were taken away at what they didn't have to provide to you. And so, and even when this was, so Gerald Ford was president then, and records later showed us, thanks to FOIAs, we were able to figure out in 2004 that we had all these internal documents that showed how this process went. So Ford said he wanted to actually, sign this bill and put it into place. But he had a couple guys in his cabinet, Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney. I don't know if you've
heard
of
them. Yeah.
Heard of these guys. And they said, you know what? We really shouldn't, because you should not sign this. You should veto it. Because
I'm planning in the future to wage secret wars.
no comment. But you should veto this because there can be leaks, stuff like that.
Man, those guys.
And so there were some legal arguments. The bill was unconstitutional in the Supreme Court. So then Ford ended up vetoing the bill. But fortunately, Congress decided to go ahead and override that veto, and these came into place. And so then the FOIA laws were able to be implemented a little better.
That's a good story, right?
Yeah, there you go. There's your FOIA.
Secret twist with Rumsfeld at the end.
I know. Didn't see that coming, did you?
No,
so,
I did not.
So sunshine laws, kind of the same thing, except on the state level. And state by state, they each have them. Missouri's came around in 1973, so it was actually like the timeline. It was around the time right after Watergate. When a lot of states were passing these things.
Right. So that's one important thing to remember, right? There's one FOIA, F-O-I-A law, and there's 50 sunshine laws.
Right, right. And
they're pretty different.
They are pretty different. I mean, on the large scale, they mean to do the same thing.
Right.
But they each have different rules and different interpretations at each state Supreme Court and stuff like that. I keep alluding to these exemptions. So like on the federal level, some of the obvious exemptions are – there are documents that are classified, right? Ones that are secret in the interest of national defense or foreign policy. But there's also some like internal personnel stuff that you can't release or they don't have to release. That's one thing about especially at the state level. It's that they don't have to release these things. They may release them, but they don't have to release them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So basically, any agency can release whatever they want to a journalist, but these are the things that they don't have to. They're exempt from releasing this type of
right.
information. Some other medical stuff, things that are covered by the laws, like you couldn't release something like there was a HIPAA violation you know, if it was stored in a federal database somewhere or something like that. There's also this weird one that one of the exemptions, the last one is information about gas or oil wells is one of the exemptions.
Wonder how that got there.
No comment. But at the state level, it's pretty similar. There are some exemptions, you know, different things that you can't come, you can't get at, you know, it's mainly just some of this personal information. We talked about it in the show on concealed carries and guns earlier. If you go back and listen to that, if you want to talk more about Missouri information that's not available, I guess, and what is.
Yeah. But. So there are a lot of people out there who are really dedicated to trying to open up information in state government and federal government. One of those is the
The State Integrity Investigation. It was the Center for Public Integrity, Global Integrity, and Public Radio International.
Oh, yeah, those guys.
Those guys. We've heard of them.
Yeah, we like them. Yeah. So anyways, how does Missouri stack up?
Again, we're always somewhere in the middle of the pack, right? We got a C minus in our government openness grade, okay? Mm-hmm. Nobody got better than a B+. New Jersey got a B+. I don't know.
Of all places.
Of all places, New Jersey. But we got a C minus, okay? That ranks us about tied for 15th on how good we're doing. You know, we didn't get an F or anything like that. But that was basically ranking a lot of different things. They interviewed journalists. They looked at the state laws, and they saw what things are like here in Missouri. So, you know, one interesting exception that was highlighted by this was we talked about how you can get emails from different public officials. Well, state legislators, you can't get their emails, even though you can get the governor's emails.
It's the weirdest thing.
Yeah, it's one of those like interpretations of the law. It's not even necessarily explicitly in the Sunshine Law, but it's based on your definition. This is all the legalese stuff, your definition of what a body is and what an individual is. And so that's one exemption. That's one strange exemption, and that varies state by state. But, you know, legislators are very aware of that. Some have tried to get that changed. Others say no. Then our constituents wouldn't write us and want to tell us things about, you know, personal information because they'd be worried that it'd be accessible to anybody who wants to request it, right? But others say, look, this should be clear. You're using government time. You're getting paid to be here. You're using government computers and your government account. That should be available to everybody to know what you're doing as an elected official. So, Missouri got some good signs as well. You know, there's a lot of one place that's kind of mixed is the campaign contributions.
Right. So if a lobbyist or anybody wants to donate $5,000 or more to any campaign, that has to be reported, and that's easily findable online, and that's a plus.
Yeah, that's a plus. And so I've combed through that before, and it is a really nice database on the Missouri Ethics Commission website.
Yeah, there's some crappy databases out there.
Yeah, right? Yeah, there are. This is a pretty good one. So you're able to get a lot of information you need. You can search by person that's donating, search by candidate, search by year, search by race, search by all this stuff. So it is nice to be able to get to that information, but that information doesn't have to be really explicit. There aren't really discrete, you know, getting back to the Kinder example you gave earlier, you don't have to be that explicit about what exactly everything was donated for, how everything was spent. So there's still there are places that could be improved, right?
Right. And then there are some issues that are actually getting uncovered by our friends in St. Louis Public Radio right now, where a lot of the donations and lobbyist gifts are given to committees and groups. And again, it's one of those weird things about how do you define a legislator, you know? So perhaps they're intending to give to the chair of the committee. We're not sure. But you can give all this money to the committee, and you don't have to report who it goes to.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, I think any politician in any state, the rules are different state to state, but they're going to play the game wherever they are, right? They're going to know the rules, and they're going to find whatever ways they can to get around. If they're trying to hide something, they'll find a way to keep it veiled, right?
Right.
And so I think they're – basically that's what kind of why I don't think we got – nobody got an A. If there were more rules that said you can't do this, you can't do this, you know, here's something that we think you're probably going to try to use as a loophole. Let's close this hole right here for you. Then we might score better. There's definitely room for improvement on campaign contributions, but you're not going to have to put in a FOIA request to get some of this basic info. Go right now and look up anything about what Peter Kinder got from different donators across the state, and you'll know what's going on. So so there's some mixed bag there.
Yeah, but it's not just about the rules either. It's about the enforcement. You know, and journalists often talk about themselves as watchdogs, but really they can't make anybody do or not do something. What's supposed to be the body that enforces these rules is the Ethics Commission.
Right, the Missouri Ethics Commission, which that's one article we're looking at here that maybe we'll link to. Is the St. Louis Beacon did a great wrap-up of this grade we're talking about. And that was one of the things they talked about was the Ethics Commission. And basically that it doesn't have a lot of teeth at the moment. It's got a relatively small staff that has to process all these documents. It seems like for a while they weren't even allowed to launch. I think now they finally are, but they weren't even allowed to launch their own investigations. They were only able to start investigations that they were asked to start, right? So they're supposed to be monitoring these documents and looking for anomalies and looking for problems, but or at least that's ideally what this Ethics Commission would do, right? Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be this government agency watchdog.
Yeah.
But at the moment, it's, you know, as it says here in this article, the General Assembly suffers from the fox guarding the hen house syndrome, right? Where there's a lot of there's other things where some of these legislators can be paid political sultans for their colleagues while they're still serving, right? So there's a lot of other strange things happening at the state level that that allow people to kind of, you know, have some conflicts of interest there.
Right. And part of it, too, is it's a little counterintuitive that it has a little bit to do with our term limit system. Mm-hmm. That term limits are really short in Missouri and that people move around their jobs a lot. So oftentimes you get a situation where, you know, you have a legislator that spent a lot of time and money to get into his position. He's about to get termed out after just a few years and he's looking for another job. And it happens to be that the people out there that have jobs are lobbyists and
right.
they happen to know them pretty well.
And you happen to be really qualified for that because you've been schmoozing around Jefferson City for 10 years or whatever.
Right. So jobs are one of the favors that get passed around a lot. And because of the term system, they're passing around a lot of them.
So, yeah, there's room for improvement for sure in Missouri. But there's also, I mean, we mentioned the documents you can get at for campaign contributions at the Missouri Ethics Commission site. But there are other documents that other agencies also just make available already where you don't have to go through this you know, exercise of doing a FOIA or sunshine request. You can just go ahead and get these documents already available online.
You know, I almost forgot. You are actually trying to get some documents right now that are not available online.
Yeah.
And maybe you can talk about what that process is like and some of the interesting things that come up.
Yeah, that's a good point. We talked about the costs, and that's where the big thing is here. So I requested some documents. I'm not going to go too far into what it's about because it's a story I'm working on. I don't really want to show my hand, but I requested some case records, right, from the Attorney General's office, actually. And I wanted for a specific case I was looking for, and some of the information I got for the first time went pretty smoothly. I got I put in a request originally about 2 months ago, right? And that's the thing, that you're supposed to have a response within 3 days, and actually supposed to be able to get the information within 3 days. But what I got was I wrote them an email, and I got a snail mail letter 2 days later that said, we're going to need until we're going to need like 2 more weeks before we can even get to what you need to get because we got to go find it. And I thought, you know, that's somewhat reasonable. If I wanted to, I probably could have pushed back, but I was going to be out of town anyway, so I didn't care. So
yeah, now this interesting thing where like we talk about FOIA requests, which means saying like this is a Freedom of Information Act request and it's kind of a formal communication. But you can also request things that are allowed under the Freedom of Information Act without actually citing the law. And
right.
That's what most people are doing. They just say, hey, can I get this information? And hopefully you don't have to talk about laws.
Yeah. And I tried to do that first, but they just said this is the best way to do it because we handle these pretty regularly and we just want to have a record of everything. So that's one of those. Yeah.
So they asked me
to make a FOIA request.
Yeah.
And that'll happen. That happens fairly regularly when you're looking for stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
I think mainly just because they want to have a record of what you requested and that type of thing for their bosses if somebody comes asking. But yeah, so it took – so again, I'm talking almost 2 months out now on this data. But I did get to go and search through some data and search through some case files and find some stuff that I wanted. But there was still more that I was looking for. And so they found more of it. So the first time was pretty nice. They ended up giving it to – they were going to charge me. They ended up giving it to me for free because it was – we all worked together pretty well and we're nice. And, you know, you're supposed to be able – I always request for it to be free because it's in the public service. I work for a nonprofit as an NPR affiliate. And so sometimes they'll honor that and give it to you for free. Sometimes they'll charge you these administrative fees. They can charge you hourly fees on what the person is, and they can charge you up to 10 cents a page for copies. I got it on a DVD, so they didn't have to pay for copies. And the person that was working was the custodian of records, who's there. Every agency has to have a person who takes care of this stuff, and that's the custodian of records. And so their hours are kind of already spent on this anyway, right?
Yeah.
But now I found this other information, which is a ton more information that I really want. And I just got an email yesterday that said, yeah, if we wanted to copy everything that we're looking for here, it would cost
$29,000.
$29,000. $29,000.
They're talking about like 200 boxes.
Like 200 boxes of stuff. I mean, yeah. I think about calling back and saying, yeah, you know what? I'll just take the next year off and tell my boss to put my money.
What if he actually did it? He thinks it's a bluff.
Yeah, exactly.
You're just like, all right, so who do I make it out to?
Yeah, exactly. No, but that said, he was just kind of demonstrate like, look, here's the wide breadth of stuff. But they also said, we'll charge you $40 an hour for somebody that's going to go through this and make sure and take out the information that needs to be private, right? Information about individuals, especially minors, take all this information out that you shouldn't be able to have access to for good reasons, under exemptions in the law, that I don't want. I don't want information about people that, you know, shouldn't – the information that shouldn't be there. It would cost me a ton to get this information that I want. Yeah. So regardless of the fact that I think they want to – you know, as demonstrated by the last time I worked with them, they've been giving me information pretty willingly. But sometimes there's still just this stuff. It's really a negotiation. That's what it comes down to. You're negotiating with these agencies and with the custodian of records to get what you want as a journalist and make it reasonable because we can't really pay that type of money. But they also can't spend the next 2 months – put somebody on this for 2 months to go through – you know, a couple hundred thousand documents looking for names to black out, right? So
it's an important and kind of subtle point too, right? That like the information is available, but by law, but it's not necessarily accessible, and that has to do with the law, but it also has to do with the form that it's in, the fact that it's paper, the fact that it's mixed in with private information.
Right.
You know, you might not even want the private information, but it takes labor to get that out of there so that you can get the non-private stuff.
Right. And I knew that when I was requesting that there was a good chance that's what it was like, but I figured I'll still give it a shot because the FOIA request doesn't cost me anything. I'm always, you know, it doesn't cost you anything until you actually get something. But I figured throw it out there and see what they've gotten. But yeah, well, I'll have to figure something out. I'll have to decide whether there's just a few of those boxes I want to go through. Whether I can stomach paying or the KBIA can stomach paying some money for that or if we just don't actually need this information that much because we've already got what we need otherwise.
So if any listeners want to kick in $29,000.
Yeah, if you got it just lying around.
We got a kick-ass story.
It's pretty awesome stuff. I mean.
Can't tell you about it.
No, not yet. You'll know sometime soon.
Yeah.
One other thing we wanted to mention about Missouri that was kind of interesting is we had a big conspiracy about this back in 2007 involving the governor's office, involving the Sunshine Law.
All right.
And that was Governor Matt Blunt and a couple other familiar names there. It was Ed Martin was part of his campaign. Ed Martin ran for attorney general this year. And Scott Eckersley, who also ran for senator at one point. Or no, I'm sorry, for the U.S. House at one point. So in 2007, there was some internal communication that basically they were going to start deleting emails, and it was determined later that that would allegedly be in violation of the Sunshine Law, some of these emails that need to be available for the public record. And Scott Eckersley became a whistleblower of sorts and said, hey, this is not something we should be doing, and was fired within a few days. Ed Martin was involved in this as well. And so Eckersley, later they said that Eckersley was fired for other reasons as well. He was doing other work on the job, not, you know, outside work with state materials, and was showing up late every day. So they said that's why we fired him, not because of this thing that he was doing. But it ended up being a big deal, right? Because the governor's office was allegedly trying to skirt some of this, some Sunshine Law, you know, someone could potentially be requesting documents. And not that they had, but eventually it's ended up with Eckersley sued. They ended up getting $500,000 in settlement from the state.
Right, a settlement that admitted no wrong.
That admitted no wrong.
I think $500,000 is quite a bit.
I think they did write a letter saying Eckersley's a good guy or something like that. He asked for that, and I think he got something like that.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we didn't mean it. You know, we think he's a good person, and we shouldn't. We don't want to smear him. Because there was also like one report of him looking at, you know, some sort of websites he shouldn't have been looking at or something like that at work. And so, you know, he's saying, hey, you're literally, you know, slandering me and stuff. So it was a mess. It was a mess. But it was an opportunity for people for the Kansas City Star and St. Louis Post-Dispatch. They kind of banded together and started requesting some of these documents and trying to figure out what happened here. And it was an opportunity for the press and the state to say, hey, this stuff's important and the government shouldn't be able to work around this. Because this is an important, you know, this is an important thing. Now that said, I mean, shoot, my emails are, you can FOIA request my, or Sunshine request my emails as a state employee if you wanted to.
I did 3 days from now.
Uh-oh.
Reading all your emails.
Uh-oh.
One sent to me.
That's not good.
True.
So hopefully nobody listening wants to do that. But you know, if you're smart, you know, you could always just use a Gmail account, a Hotmail account.
Yeah,
and get your stuff done that way as well. So there are always workarounds, unfortunately. But this was one that was very obvious, and so it's something that's, you know, that's always going to be a something to battle at the state level. I think as long as politicians are politicians, it's going to be tough, and you know, it's only getting tougher. If you listen to Intersection this week, you'll see what we're talking about. Things are only getting tougher. The stakes are higher, and the political information machine is only. More is just getting finer and finer tuned.
Yeah, it's getting harder and harder to get information out there, and people seem to be caring less and less. In theory, they care a lot, right? But like when violations of records laws get overlooked, it just sounds like the most boring thing ever.
It really does. I think that was our concern with the show, and there's chance you're not even listening anymore because you did get bored with it. But when it comes down to it, it is important, right? We fight these little battles and make a big deal out of something small because it could be a big deal when you need it, right?
Right. And going back to the beginning and cost you money. You know, if every politician can spend $35,000 a year on stuff that has nothing to do with his job, then you know we're losing even more money than we thought.
Right. Or if a legislator can, you know, email with a lobbyist on his official account and say, yes, you know, hey, if you'll pay for my World Series tickets next week, yeah, I'll vote for this. You know, he could say that on his email and nobody would ever find out unless that lobbyist forwards on to somebody. Like that communication is not even accessible to us at the moment. So, I mean, that there's real stuff happening that we still can't get at that will affect, you know, what laws we see in the state and how your money's spent.
Well, that's going to do it for Como Explained. I want to remind you that this is our 8th episode, 2 straight months of Como Explained.
Wow.
And we still got a lot of really cool, timely episodes. Our last episodes about bridges and infrastructure, I think, is still pretty relevant. Mm-hmm. Not much has changed.
They've not all been fixed yet.
We haven't fixed all the bridges in Missouri since from last week until now. So give that a listen. It's very easily findable on kbia.org, also on the iTunes store. Just search for Como Explained. If you really like us, leave a comment. It means a great deal. It helps people find the podcast. All right, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.